Mr. Guthrie, Reel 1. Could we start, please, by your telling me whereabouts you were born?
I was born in London, in South Kensington.
Which year was that?
1911.
And what did your father do for a living?
Oh, he was, quotes, in the city, unquotes. He was the director of a bank and of an insurance company and that kind of thing.
Did you go to school in London?
No, I went to... First of all, I went to a school, a prep school in near Brighton. I went there aged 5 to a boarding school, which, when I look back, absolutely horrifies me. Admittedly, there was the First World War was on then, and... my mother thought she wanted to get me away from air raids, and such as they were in World War I. So my brother, my elder brother, 2 years older, was going to a prep school, and I couldn't see why he should have this wonderful thing happen to him and not me, and they made such a fuss that she said, oh, well, you better go too. So, as I say, aged 5, I went off to boarding school near Brighton. Then I stayed there for several years, obviously, until I went to Malvern, which I didn't like very much. And that was all of my education.
Do you have any memories of the First World War?
Oh, yes. I have, well, yeah, I remember soldiers, I remember prisoners of war, at Ford Junction, which you've just come through, when I was on the... We had a house also at Sea View on the Isle of Wight then, and I was going, I think, to Sea View for holiday, and there were German prisoners of war on the platform, and I was absolutely petrified. Don't know what they might do to me. I remember Armistice Day, where we sort of tried to have jollities at school.
What and form did the jollities take?
The jollities took form of getting out a lot of old flags that were in the sort of locker room and going to Ovingdean Church for a special service with the village, because we had our own little chapel in the school. And this was a special occasion. As I say, we went, marched down half a mile or so to the church and attended the service there. And I went the other day and happened to see the vicar, and I said, the last time I came to your church was on November the 11th, 1918, which rather surprised him.
Now, can we go on to the Second World War, and can you tell me what you were doing and what you remember when war was declared?
Yes, I was not working at that time. I'd been acting and trying to write. And I was down here, actually, I think, when Neville Chamberlain made his broadcast. I had a little cottage in the village, not this house, another one. And I was down here probably trying to write or do something.
We should say this is Amberley that you're referring
to. This is Amberley I'm referring to, yes. I've lived in 4 houses here, you see, and this is the last. And I went up to London and tried to join the Navy with a friend of mine. We both thought we'd join the Navy, and he, in fact, did join the Navy and was killed in the Blitz on Belfast. And when I came along, they said, what experience of the sea have you had? Were you in the merchant service or anything? I said, no, none at all. And they said, oh, well, you just wait until you're called up then. This was what was called a phony war, as you know. And they couldn't have been less interested. Well, I suppose they had nothing for me to do, so to speak. And I thought, well, I must do something. And I joined the War Reserve Police, which was had been set up because they feared there might be air raids and so on. And nothing happened. There were no air raids at that time. And then I had the chance, through a personal contact, of joining a unit which was being sent to Finland, a British unit which was being sent to Finland to fight in the Russo-Finnish War.
What was your contact?
This was a friend who somehow knew somebody to do with it. I can't remember why, but it was entirely a personal thing. I don't know. But he said, oh, there is this unit going. If you go along to Smith Square, I think it was, you can enlist in that.
Did you feel strongly about the Finnish War?
I felt fairly strongly, but I must explain, which people forget, that at that time Germany and Russia had recently, in June, I think, if I remember rightly, signed a non-aggression pact, and they were allies. So I was saying to myself, only way I seemed to be able to get into the fighting, I was young and belligerent, I suppose, in those days, and I felt I ought to be doing something, and the Navy didn't want me, and they told me to wait until I was called up. Here was a chance of doing something straight away against an ally of the of what I might call our enemy, right?
Yes. So you went to Smith Square, and what happened there?
Well, I joined up and signed various papers. This was a unit which perhaps you're not aware of. It was financed, I think, by Lord Nuffield. And it was sent over pretty rapidly to Finland. To help the Finns, who were, at that time, gallant little Finland, you know, they're fighting the whole weight of Russia and so on and so on, they're not giving up, and all very glamorous. And I found myself as adjutant to the unit. This is really just a title, it really meant nothing. Except that I went over first with the commanding officer. And a packing case of rifles, which we took. We went from Edinburgh. Nobody had told us where to go or what to do. It was entirely on our own. But we went to Edinburgh, hoping to get a boat of the Salvesen line, the cargo boat, to Norway, wherever, Norway probably. And he went and saw Salvesen himself, and he was very friendly but rather unhelpful. And then he told us there was a little boat at a place called Methil, which was up the coast. I don't know if you know that part of
yes.
Scotland. And that would be going quite shortly, the next day or two, to Norway. And we went back to our hotel, which was a rather nice hotel in Georgian Edinburgh, with our packing case of rifles under the bed. And 2 days later, I think, we took a taxi to Methil. And we went and saw the captain and said, you know, I gather you will take us to Norway. Told him what was happening, and he said, yes, of course. So we went to Bergen on his little boat, which is a very small boat. And then we got out and spent the night there. And then took a train to Helsinki, if you like, but first of all to a place... No, not to Helsinki, that's not true. We took a train to a place called Lapua, which is around the top of the Gulf of Bothnia, And we stopped there, made contact with the Finnish army, told them who we were. I forget how we actually did this. And they said, oh yes, well, the rest of your unit will come quite shortly to Lapua. Well, before they arrived, which was a week later, or maybe less, peace had broken out, and it was a bit of a problem as to what we should do. So the Finnish General Mannerheim, Field Marshal Mannerheim, came down and said how good it was of us to come. Of course, we'd done nothing. We hadn't even fired a shot or even got to the front line or to anywhere, really. And they said we could stay there if we wanted, or go right back to England. Well, Russia had taken very little in her armistice treaty or whatever. You know, she'd taken a small part of Karelia, right the other side of the country, which of course nearer to Russia, and the harbour down in the southwest corner of Finland, whose name I forget at the moment, but it's quite an important harbour because it controls the Gulf of Bothnia and the Baltic.
Hanko?
And so.
Hanko?
Maybe. Maybe. Don't think that's quite it, but maybe that's part of it. I don't know. And I and various people said, oh, well, she's only taken that amount. She's going to just have a good think and grab some more. So the war is not probably necessarily finished. And I said, and there was nothing happening on the home front at all, the Pony War is still dragging on, I and some others, about half of us, said we'd stay there, and about half said they'd go home. And the ones that said they'd go home got as far as Oslo on the day the Germans arrived. The Germans invaded. So they had a bit of a rough time, and I don't really know what happened to them. They got away mostly, I think. And we stayed for another 3 months or so in Finland, training and popping around and so on. Then that period came to an end, and the Finns said, well, you know, thank you very much. We can't use you anymore, and you had better stay. You'd better go home, but you can't go home, because at that time, of course, Norway had gone, Denmark had gone, the whole of the German putsch had taken place. And Finland was completely surrounded with Russia, its immediate enemy, so to speak, on one side, and Germany, its allied enemy, its ally, the ally of its enemy, on the other side. So they said, you mustn't go within 100 miles or so of the frontier, but you can just stay here until we have thought it all over. Well, I thought, I'm not going to just sit around twiddle my thumbs in Helsinki. So I took a train up north to a place called Rovaniemi, which was the railhead at the beginning of Lapland, so to speak. And this was the beginning of the Arctic Highway, which was the entry and was the only way you could get in or out of Finland, was through the Arctic, along the Arctic Highway to Petsamo, which is up on the Arctic Circle, up in the Arctic Ocean. And the lorries went up and down that, churning the place up. And anything that was imported, anything that was exported, went up that road. And I got on a bus. No, I didn't get on a bus. I got on a truck, a great big truck, which was carrying cement or something. I'm not sure, it wouldn't be cement, but I don't know what it was. It was carrying up to the north driven by a Swede. And it was a great big thing. And I had a little money then, and I said, you know, how much, let me go on this, on your lorry. And he said, oh, yes, all right, you get on. And I slipped him some money, I forget what it was, and climbed in under the canvas which covered the goods in the back of this enormous lorry. And proceeded north. And cut a long story short, nobody knew I was there. I peeked out every now and then to see what was happening. Of course, this was midsummer, and, you know, there was no darkness, which didn't make it easy for escaping in this kind of way. Anyhow, I got up, and I got off when I got to Petsamo, and said to him, you know, goodbye and thank you very much, and disappeared. And he went off wherever he had to go, down to the harbour, no doubt. There had been a man who I had met in Helsinki who had shipping of his own. He was the chairman or something, or managing director of a shipping company. And I said to him, I want to get out, I want to get back to England, how can I do it? And he said, oh, come on my boat, so I'll take you. So I went to look for him, and he was, of course, utterly astonished to see me, because he knew that there were various police cordons and police points and things that this lorry had gone through, and foreigners would have been thrown off if they'd been noticed. So I said, you remember you did say you thought you could have a place for me on one of your boats. And he said, I don't think it's so easy as I thought. And anyhow, he changed his mind. So I thanked him. There was no point arguing with him. I thanked him and thought, well, I suppose the best thing I can do is to try and get into the north of Norway. And I went west. I had no map. I had a tourist map, which was useless, you know, saying have jolly holidays in Finland. I went west, which struck me as the best thing to do. I went straight west. And that was a terrible trip. I don't know how I was about to... I don't know how long it was, because of this thing of the sun never going down. You know, I really didn't know whether yesterday was today or tomorrow. And the mosquitoes up there were absolutely horrific. I never knew that. I thought they were things from Central Africa, but they were terrible, and they bit me and bit me, and I struggled on. And I remember my shoe collapsed, and I had to bind that up with a handkerchief so as the sole was flapping. And I went on across this tundra in this rain with mosquitoes and lakes. And every time I came to a lake, well, little lakes they were, the one was fairly big, I said to myself, that spot over there looks due west from here. And I went round the lake and picked it up again the other side and went on. And eventually, feeling really more dead than I can think, I found a little track, and this track eventually led to a hut, and in this hut there was a stove and some palliasses, and I thought, well, I'll go into that, and really I can't stand any longer, I'm so tired. So I pulled up one palliasse on top of me and the other I pushed it underneath me and slept like a sandwich. I didn't sleep really, but I rested myself a little bit. And then I came out and had a look round, and saw that it was probably a workman's hat or something, on the edge of a village. There seemed to be some smoke coming up from chimneys and things, or something of that nature. So I went towards that, which meant I think I probably turned north at that point, and went down and saw various little huts and houses and things. And I went into the biggest. I was very hungry too. The nearest and biggest. And when I went in, I opened the door and found it was full of soldiers. Well, they were the last people one see. I don't know whether they were German soldiers, Russian soldiers, or Finnish soldiers, but I looked very at my ease and looked round as if I was looking for some chum or something, and went out again, and they didn't seem to pay any attention to me. And I went quite a long way before. And then I saw another farmhouse, which was obviously a farmhouse. And there were cattle and things there. And I went out into that farmhouse and thought, well, you know, I can't fool them as to what I am for more than a few seconds. So I said in English, I'm hungry. Have you got anything to eat, please? I suppose I said I'm English. I'm trying to. I didn't really go into what I was trying to do, but I wanted to get further on, and I've run out of food. And nice woman, cosy woman, said something or other, pea soup. Well, pea soup in Swedish, I suppose it was. It might have been in Finnish as the same as in English. So I said, yes, please. And she gave me a lovely bowl of pea soup. There was an old man in the corner who didn't think this was quite. I could see he wasn't really approving of all this. So after a while, I thanked her and departed, having had a bit of a rest and a bit of nice warm soup in me. And then I came down back to what seemed to be a little inlet with houses. It was in the village here. And at that point, I found some soldiers walking towards me, the opposite way I was going. And they stopped me and said something. And I said, I'm sorry, I'm English. I don't speak any other language. One of them spoke a little English, or schoolboy English. And he said, where are you? Where are you going? And that sort of thing. And I was honest but played a bit stupid at the same time. Perhaps that is being honest. They said, eventually come with us. So I said, I suppose that means I'm arrested, does it? And he said, I suppose so. So I followed him to his headquarters, where I was interviewed by a captain, and who spoke very good English. And I told him what I was doing and that I was a ex-volunteer, everything quite honestly. And he then said, you better wait here, and I'll be back in a few minutes. So off he went, and I fell asleep. Which is odd, because my life really was pretty much, it wasn't in danger at all, but it might have been at that moment. And when he came back and said, we've been talking to a commanding officer, and he says that we can't keep you here. If we keep you here, the Germans will soon say, who is this man and why is he here, and then they will shoot you. And he said the other thing, only alternative, is to go back the way where you came, back into Finland. So I said, okay, well, I'll have to go back into Finland. And then he said, I will drive you down to a place, I'll drive you down to a place where there will be a boat. And a small boy will be rowing this boat. And he will row you across the river, and that's Finland on the other side of the river.
So the Germans had taken over Norway by now.
Oh, yes, yes. As I say, I didn't know whether the soldiers I'd seen were Germans. They might have been. I'd rather think they weren't, because it would have been the very end of their the what they'd taken, you see, up in, it was a place called Kirkenes in Norway, which is on the map as the last harbour along the coast there before you come to Russia. Now, before, there was this little spit of land which was Petsamo and was Finnish. But after, when I'm talking about, quite some time after, I suppose after the whole of the war, in the final treaty, they took all that. So there was no outlet for Finland to the Arctic Ocean. So, he said, don't talk to the boy. He'll probably ask you what you're doing. Don't answer him. This all happened, as he said. He took me down and dropped me off on the side of the road, and there was a small boy, only about 12 years old, I think, with a boat. And the officer said something to him and put me in it. And we started off, and after a while the boy said something, which was presumably, who are you? Which I didn't answer. And he rowed me over. It wasn't a river so much as an inlet. You know, it was quite wide, and dumped me on the other side. And off I went, and I got back onto the Arctic Highway, which was not very far, a few miles away, and got on another lorry going south down to Rovaniemi again, where I spent the night, and then got on the train again back to Helsinki. So that was quite fun and completely abortive and slightly alarming when you think about it. Okay?
Yes.
Do you want to pause there?
Well, if I can just ask you one or two questions about the earlier thing you told me before we resume the narrative. How big was this unit that you were adjutant of that was going to Finland?
I can't tell you the exact numbers. I should think about 100, 120 strong, that sort of thing, I think. Ragtag and bobtail collection of people, some of whom had military experience, some of whom had OTC experience like me and nothing else. And the commanding officer was a man called Colonel Shandor. Where the colonel came from, I don't know, but I think he was probably in the previous war, because he was a good deal older than me. He's dead now.
What did the motivation seem to be? Was it idealistic, or
no,
were they adventurers, or what?
I think one or two, a few, were like me, you know, a bit browned off not being able to get to do what we felt might be helpful. Some were, I think, pretty good rogues when we got to know them a bit better.
What gave you that impression?
Well, there was a kleptomaniac who really was rather tiresome. He stole such bloody silly thing. I remember I inspected his kit bag once, and it was full of boots. Masses of boots. And another time, it was full of his kit was full of medical equipment,